So you have a itinerary and your love overlanding. You have plans to do it big on the trace and some super glamping. One idea's deep news and reviews, a podcast the first rate and here just for you. You don't have to think about it, join us and be about it. Something interesting we want to hear about it. Come on, let's talk about it. Welcome to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints Podcast.
Sponsored by Midland. Communication for every adventure. The industry leader in radio communication technology and innovation for over 50 years. Sponsored by MyMedic. Sponsored by Tembo Tusk. Sponsored by Shower Pouch. Sponsored by DeMoss Collective, mission built and made for mobility. Sponsored by BrewTrek. Sponsored by Hard Impact Designs.
Always remember, the opinion you follow should be your own. Just consider the things stated here to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
Oh, you know, stressful day working on the truck and, you know, trying to get my projects done so I can get out on the road and see you guys and have a good time and stop working full time.
We miss you, bro.
No.
So do you have any like news you want to break on the or any updates on where you're at with the vehicle?
Ran into some problems. I had some mechanical issue and can't get the truck started. It's a solenoid, starter solenoid. So that's causing it. So it's basically stranded where I'm working on it right now. And I'm waiting on a part to get it started, but hopefully I can get that fixed. But it delayed me a little bit and I'm really up against the time window here. So a little stressed.
Oh, wow. I know you'll get it done, so I'm not even going to worry about it. It's a lot of people got a lot. That's not a big problem, Mike. There's some more stressful things going on out there. Have you heard about what's going on in Hawaii?
Oof. Yeah, not good. And now it sounds kind of like it's like somebody screwed the pooch on the emergency warning system or something. Didn't work or go off or... I don't know. I mean, they invest all this money, supposedly had a state-of-the-art one, and it didn't work. Go figure.
Well, it was really devastating when you get into the details. When I first started watching the story, it was like they said 35 dead. Now, the last number that I read was 93. It kept escalating over the course of the weekend. The Maui police chief, he said that they're having trouble identifying the dead bodies that they do find because we pick up the remains and they fall apart.
I heard they said it could be over 1,000. They've got literally thousands of people that are not accounted for. So it's not good. I mean, you know, it was bad when you first heard the story broke and they were people jumping into the ocean. So yeah, I mean, not a good scenario for sure.
Yeah, he went on more to say that the families that they're finding, they were involved in a fire that burned metal. So the remains are pretty much minimal that they're finding.
And like I said,
yeah, so that's really crazy. At least 2,200 buildings have been destroyed. A lot of historical buildings have been destroyed.
Beautiful town. I went there like, I don't know, well, that's probably 15 years ago. It's amazing. It was a little historic town, really. It was cool. But I can kind of see what one of the problems is. It's hard to, I mean, it's only one road in and one road out, kind of. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is part of it, was probably part of it.
Yeah. There were a lot of survivors that, the way they survived was there was only one way to go, and that was into the water.
Yeah.
And they were finding people in the water 3 days later.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
Yeah. Not good at all.
So anybody got any plans of their journeys going into Hawaii, I would put that off for a little while. The Maui fires have forced the closure of the Haleakalai National Park also. And they don't know when that'll be coming back. They're refunding camping reservations from August 11th through August 14th. And they'll be looking at giving refunds to people accordingly.
And even the areas that were not affected are obviously being affected by resources now because they're being diverted mm-hmm. to other places on mm-hmm. the island. So it is, it's definitely a tough situation.
Now, this is something personal to me, might be personal to you because you live way more closer to this than I do. Matter of fact, you live right across a river from Glacier National Park. Glacier National Park staff is seeking public comment on a proposal to increase most campsite fees in 2024. And with most sites looking at a $10 a night increase. Now, $10 does not seem like a lot, but I remember I was a young man taking my kids places and stuff like that. And you, $10 is a lot. You want to spend a weekend, that's $30. That could have been one more night that you spent in the park. That could be a some happy meals for your kids. That could be gas in your tank.
I hate to say it. It's not even enough because, the problem is, I think what they're trying to address is the overpopulation taxing on the infrastructure there because it's been so, so busy. I hate to say it, but $10 isn't going to be enough. It's not going to be enough to slow that down. So I would not be even remotely surprised if they raise it $10 and then a year later they raise it again, if it maybe even more than that. And it comes down to one of the problems we're having with our national park system is that they are, and I don't want to criticize anybody, but there's probably like five or six national parks that are so famous, they get really inundated. And there's a lot of other national parks and monuments and stuff that are far less visited, is that a word? Visited. And maybe that's something that's a marketing thing because, you know, everybody knows Glacier and Yellowstone and Yosemite, you know, right? But I could throw these big ones right out, boom. And that's, I think those are the ones that are, you see it now, you're having animal problems. And it's not animal problems, it's just so many more guests getting closer and closer to the wildlife. You're seeing that problem, particularly in Yellowstone. But, Yellowstone Glacier, I know a lot of people that make that loop that do both Yellowstone and Glacier because they're not that far, right? And I could tell you from where I am up in Glacier, it's driven the property values through the ceiling because, man, if I built a campground right now, I'd make millions. Honestly, that there's no place to stay. Everything's booked out. I don't care what you charge for it. You could raise it $10 or $50. It's still going to be booked out.
Well, there's a serious irony to everything that you're saying. I totally agree with everything that you said. They are trying to impede the amount of people who come to the parks and camp there. I agree with you on that. But the irony comes that the whole point of creating the national parks was to set aside these lands for the common people. I'm almost verbatim saying what the purpose was supposed to be for right. the common people.
And there you go.
And actually, for decades now, it has not been priced at a point for common people.
Glacier's a good example of this. It's super expensive to go to Glacier. The camping is already fairly on the expensive side before they raise it. And then if you choose not to camp, if you stay at, say, the lodge or one of those places down there, they're very expensive. Mm-hmm. And then obviously everything in that area, you know, anywhere from groceries to fuel to everything else, getting in and out of there, it's kind of remote. It's pretty expensive. So it's not, we've lost touch with the, hey, not to get political, but this is all of America. Like, pretty much at this point, everything is against the guys at the bottom, you know, and usually it's put in place by the people that supposedly support the people at the bottom, but they're the ones that make it the worst. You know, I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. And the irony of that is we generally have voted them in.
That's right. Yeah. The only people that you can blame. I mean, we were having this conversation with the other day with somebody, you know, I had a couple of friends. I think I was talking to you offline, maybe, you know, down in Mexico, and they, you know, I was on the phone with them, and they were asking me about, you know, God, you guys are nutty up there north of the border with, you know, your politics and who's running for office right now and your top candidates and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, but at the end of the day, like, that's us. Who the hell is supporting these people? Who is voting these people in?
I agree.
Who do we blame? We can't blame Mexico. You can't blame Germany. You can't be, Americans are voting for, I don't know, senile people over 80.
And I go to all of these parks, man. And I mean, just from the eye test and just taking a guesstimate, you know, when they're putting together the budget, the amount of money needed to update the parks and make them more viable and to subsidize the cost to the people coming in, that would be a drop in the bucket. It's not like it's some major amount of money necessary. Nobody would even miss it. When they do the budget and everybody writes in their little line for some money for their state, it would be like the amount of that. So I don't understand why there's so much disdain toward funding the parks, because it's one of the cheapest things to fund.
It's a lot cheaper than sending missiles to Ukraine.
I mean,
let's be honest. What we fire off in one day, we could take care of the national parks. I mean, let's be real here, folks. I mean, and it's interesting you say that about the, you know, just kind of the gloss over. I was in Glacier last year. And, you know, if you go in the parking lot, there's a lot more Range Rovers in the parking lot than there are Chevy station wagons.
Yes, I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. It is definitely upper middle class on up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, which is defeating the purpose of the land for all and public land available for everybody's entertainment and enjoyment and, you know. We've lost sight of that for sure.
What bothers me most about that part of it is the hardworking guy, he saved up all year, maybe a couple of years, to take this trip, this one trip, short trip for a few days to a national park. And he's already paying $25 per day to get in. If he wants to feed his kids, he either has to go to the grocery store and make food, or he has the option of buying food there. But it's like going to a 4-star restaurant with the prices. The food isn't 4-star, but the prices are.
Correct. Yeah.
Pretty much anything that you would want.
You could see that in Grand Canyon. You go, it's 4-star high end prices. Food is crap. I mean, really.
So you're taking your kid and you're probably not allowing them to do a lot of things that they're seeing other people do. And that's not a good vibe or feeling either. You know, it's like going to Disneyland and you can't go on any of the rides because you can't afford tickets to the rides or something.
Right. Yeah. I agree with you, Phil. It's a problem. And I also think, by the way, that economically, the middle class and probably maybe, you know, lower middle class are more likely to frequent the national parks because they may not be jet setting off to, a palm tree island somewhere. They're more inclined to do a road trip or stay more local or, you know, a car trip with the family or something. And obviously those are the people that are going to get impacted by this more than anybody.
Well, I hate to tell you this, bro, but it's already been for years now. Let's say a guy lived in Colorado and he was going to take his family of three, wife, two kids, to Glacier from Colorado, and just do the regular old thing. Nothing's fantastic. Just stop a couple of times, stay in a hotel, eat at some medium priced restaurants and go there and come back. When you tally up gas, food, all of those things, they could have gone somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's where the cost is on these things now.
Yeah, they could be in the Bahamas.
The gas is pricing a lot of people out of it. Mm-hmm. Before we get off of this, I just want to end it with that there's public comment is being taken through September 8th. You can find additional details and leave your comments at the National Park Service Park Planning. You can go to what's called the Civic Engagement for Proposed Campgrounds Fee Increases, and you can give your vote as well as comment on whether you feel like this should be done. So I'm hoping that there's a great outpouring of people that go to this site. Hopefully the people who are watching this on YouTube will see it below. I'll put it down below. And if you're watching this as an audio only, it will be part of the timestamp. I will include the link for you to be able to go there, comment, and vote. Because this is a very important thing. If you've lived in America for any amount of time, you have to have learned that once you give an inch, the government takes a mile.
It's not coming back.
Right. So if we don't fight this, this is the way of the world. This is the direction it's going to go. It's going
to
be a thing.
By the way, it starts with Glacier, and it starts with Yellowstone and Yosemite, and then it'll spread to Bryce, and it'll spread to, you know, Mojave, and it'll spread to wherever. I mean, it's just, yeah, they're going to tackle the big, big tourist areas first, and then it'll filter down. And eventually you're looking at resort campground kind of prices.
I keep wanting to make this clear. It's already resort prices.
Absolutely.
So it's not like they've been holding the prices down for decades and they need to.
Remember back in the day, you could go if it was a state park or a federal park. It was like camping fees were like $5, or you know what I mean? They were really low. There's a few. Canada is a good example of this. Provincial parks are if you've never been to any of the parks in Canada, they're spectacular. The provincial ones in particular are really nice, and they've generally been able to hold the cost down. But they're putting more money into. Of course, they don't have. Canada doesn't have any missiles or tanks, so they put more money into the national park, right?
Bro, go into a little more detail about the camping arrangements in the provincial parks in Canada for those who have never gone to a campground in Canada. Because it's a shock to the system the very first time you go to one of these campgrounds.
Yep. I mean, they range. I've been to every province in Canada, and they definitely range depending on where you are. Some of them are, a lot of them are on the honor system. You'll drive in and you it'll be like, you know, stick your $4, you know, your two toonies in a hole in a slot or something, and you know, go pick your campground. Really?
Yeah, right. And it'll be some little sign like, "Don't go crazy on the wood." You know, it'll say it in much better words.
Right.
Than that.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking,
Oh,
they have maybe a couple of bundles of wood, right? Then you go to where the wood is, and it's this big shelter. You could burn wood all day. A lot of them, the toilets are so clean. You're like, wow, this is.
Yeah, it's night. I hate to say it, but it is night and day difference. Like the infrastructure and the. Just the cleanliness and the and by the way, the availability of them is better too. You usually get into them easier, and there's more of them.
You can usually reserve them, but when you drive up to them, there's always a spot to pull in. Mm-hmm. And if it's one that's maintained by like a ranger or something, I don't know what they call their people, the equivalent of their rangers. They're very helpful. I mean, they'll like bring wood to your campground. I woke up every morning and there was a lady at one of the ones that I was at. She was literally sweeping around my fire.
What?
So I just want people, if they haven't been to Canada and they've been and haven't been to a provincial park, I really want them to know it's night and day, the campground experience here and there. There's no comparison.
Totally true.
So did you find out, did you hear about how the wildfire spread? There were like 82 mile per hour winds.
Yeah, from the hurricane.
And we're expecting windy days here where I'm at and 90 degree weather all week next week. So where I'm headed with that is, be careful of fires. We're not on an island here in the 48, 40, great 49, but you could still be caught in a bad situation. So be aware of the weather and be aware of the temperatures, because seems like the planet is burning up.
Except for here. Right. I don't think anything's going to burn here. We get rain like pretty much every 6 hours. Seems like, looks like it's going to rain now. And I got my motorcycle here, so of course it's going to rain.
Well, people commonly call where I live the rainy state. I haven't seen rain in months.
Yeah.
And like I said, all next week is in the 90s.
Yeah.
Hey, bro, I sent you some pictures. Did you get them?
Sure did.
Did you take
I'm going
a look?
Out buying a new Hyundai.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. So Hyundai Motor radically transformed their all-new Santa Fe SUV to offer larger class-leading interior space and tailgate openings. Did you notice
how... It's not even the same truck. I mean, come on. That thing is a Land Rover Defender killer.
That is a pretty vehicle, in
sure
my
is.
Opinion.
I agree.
I would absolutely drive it. Absolutely drive it.
I did not see that yet. Has it hit the market yet, or what's the schedule on that?
It's a 2024 vehicle. I didn't look at when they're releasing the vehicle, but usually if it's 2024, it'll be at the end of this year. Yeah. Probably in a couple of months.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful vehicle, and the pictures that they sent out, I don't know what kind of color this is. It's like a maroon mixed with brown color, but it's an awesome color. I love that color.
Yeah, it's.
And did you notice the headlights are really cool, and they're also in the shape of an H?
Yeah,
a Hyundai.
Yep. My favorite one is the one that they mocked up with I call it the off-road package.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the ladder and the roof rack and the it's even got limb stringers on the front. And that is. I kind of wish Land Rover had a design that good.
Everybody's coming after Land Rover all of a sudden. You got
they came up a little short on their Defender design. I think that's why.
I agree. They went too urban.
Yeah.
But on the Hyundai, I guess I'll call it the Overland Edition. There's also in the pillars, there's like a little trap door type thing that you push in and you can put your feet in them and you have a ladder already incorporated into it. And when your foot comes out, then it's flat again. So it doesn't look like you have a ladder. And I think that's pretty cool. I think, if that's not patented, I could see something like that being incorporated in other vehicles.
Yep.
Not even necessarily SUVs, but like, those big, big, big construction vehicles and mining vehicles where the tires are bigger than a building. Yep. I could see that being used. So overall, it sounds like you like the Santa Fe. Is that correct?
I definitely like the Santa Fe. It's night and day different. Not that there's anything wrong with the current one, but it's a totally different vehicle.
I agree. And for travelers and overlanders, it looks like they had you in mind, one with the concept vehicle, but also with the regular vehicle, with how many places there are to plug in, places to put things and store them. It looks like they actually thought this vehicle out. I need to see more. I'm hoping that there's going to be one either at Overland Expo Mountain West or East. I would think there's a good chance that we'll see it there.
Yeah.
I need to see more, but what I've seen so far, I love this vehicle.
The fact that it's square gives it a ton more room, obviously, inside. You know, I've noticed, you know, that design is going back more towards a Land Rover or a Jeep or something else that, you know, you're going to be carrying a lot of gear in.
So that's the thing that's ironic to me about this is the companies that were like known for these rough and rugged 4x4s, they're really softening up their vehicles and looks and features. And the vehicles that you kind of didn't think of in that way, they're going all in on trying to look rough and rugged and having the features and things and specs that you want.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on here. I also sent you some pictures of another vehicle.
You did, the Cadillac Escalade. My understanding, though, is that the whole brand is going electric, correct?
Yes. I don't know what the time frame is, but it is a short time frame, and that is the plan. And just so people get the full info, this is going to be a 2025 Cadillac Escalade called the IQ, and this will be the first ever all-electric full-size SUV from Cadillac. And their claim is that it'll redefine the luxury SUV experience. And here's the big thing. Cadillac is estimating 450 miles of range.
That's impressive.
That's very impressive. And usually those numbers never hold up, but they're usually close. So this gives me hope that maybe it may be in the 400 range.
Let me say this about that. If you look at a side view of that vehicle, if you don't see Range Rover in that, I don't know what you're looking at. I mean, that almost looks from the side, it almost looks identical. Even the taillights in the rear.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody is going after your Defender, man. It should have Defender shaking their head saying, wow, everybody's trying to look like us. And we're trying not to look like us.
That's right.
So the underpinnings of this Escalade IQ are actually straight from the GMC Hummer EV.
Yeah, which we've seen in person at the Overland Expos.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't remember what the range is on the Hummer, but the Hummer is like a lot less than this.
I think so, yeah. It seemed that way to me.
It's nowhere near 400. I don't even know if it's 300. It might be 300, but it ain't close to that.
No.
So would you buy one?
Yeah, it's certainly not a truck that I would, you know, want to go camping with, but it's a pretty looking night vehicle to be around town.
Well, the thing that attracts me is the 450-mile range.
Yes.
Like I mentioned so many times, I can't go into the electric game until they get around 500 miles range and they can get the charge in under 20 minutes. And I really want it to be 10 right. minutes or less, but I'm willing to start looking at 20 minutes.
Right. Because you got to compare apples to apples. So if you're looking at that, you know, if you have a gas powered vehicle and you can have a 500 mile range on which, you know, even a big truck like mine, I have a 500 mile plus range. It doesn't take me more than 10 minutes to fill up at a gas station. So why do I want to minimize or lower my, you know, standard? I want to be able to not take any longer. Right. So who wants to advance to something that goes less distance and takes longer to get back on the road?
Yeah, and we're talking in a perfect world where when you pull up, you can just pull up and immediately connect in. Everywhere I go, everybody is using them and there's somebody waiting for them.
Yeah.
So let's say they get it down to 20 minutes. That could still end up being an hour if you have to wait for two people to fill up their tank. I mean,
There's not enough connections.
Well, you weren't here, but I announced that, you know, seven of the major car makers have gotten together and they're proposing in the next couple of years to have 30,000 new charging stations across America. So the infrastructure is coming.
I did hear also there was rumor that they were going to adopt the Tesla standard.
I keep hearing that people are fighting for that.
Yeah. Well, because I think the Tesla charging system is far superior to the other ones that are out there, for one. And that part of that comes from the fact that they are more than just making cars. Obviously, the battery systems and the infrastructure that they build are for a lot of other things other than automobiles, which need to be charged faster. So I think that that's probably why that setup is better, but I don't know.
I agree with that. And also, as far as infrastructure, there are more Tesla chargers across America by far. And secondly, when it comes to some vehicles need an adapter. There's already secondary companies out there building these adapters. So it's an easy transition into these chargers, even if there's a different kind of platform that you're using.
Right. Yeah.
Did you hear about Virgin Galactic? They completed their first civilian flight.
I heard that.
Yeah. First flight. They carried three civilians and three crew members aboard and they reached space. They took off at 8:30 Mountain Time last week. And I just want to hear
when I say space, because it's kind of like, for me, if I'm getting on one of those things, I want to go to the space, like real space, not like, you know, 50,000 feet out. I mean, I'm basically flying a 747 really high.
Right. That's what I was going to say. They should just say, we flew really high.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Because I know at the altitude that they were at, there have been people who have literally, the word isn't parachuted, but they've skydived, I guess, whatever.
Skydived, yeah, from that height.
Yeah. I've literally seen a person had a GoPro, they had like on a space outfit and took that. So yeah, they got to go a little higher.
Yeah.
But one of the fun things for you techie people out there is that they flew this up there on a mothership called the VMS Eve. And it flew at Mach 3 to get this vehicle, to get the spaceship going fast enough. And they go counter to the rotation of the Earth to even increase the speed more. And then when they release it, this thing is flying. And for you tech people, Mach 3, that's 2,301 miles per hour. So we're talking about basically the equivalent of going from the East Coast to the West Coast in an hour.
Yeah.
That's incredible, man.
Which would be fantastic, boy. Let me tell you, if we could do that.
So I brought that up. There's a connection to overlanding, because you're like, that's not overlanding. That's not.
Oh, I thought we were going to take a vote here to decide whether we wanted to go on the Virgin Galactic mission to space or the Titanic. And I would go with I was definitely going to be on that. The outer space mission.
Mike, we'd be on the same page so much, because that's where I'm headed with this. There seems to be a never-ending desire to explore and see things for yourself. And one of my examples is like the submersible Galactic. Where do you see this thing going next? People are trying to find new and unique things to explore or do.
Oh, you're going to have civilians going to the moon.
You think that's coming?
Yeah. Oh yeah. As soon as they can figure out, as soon as SpaceX can figure out how to get that big thing off the ground and up there and, you know, test it out and get the US, you know, the US government's trying to get them to go to the moon. As soon as that happens, you know, they're just going to build more of them and they're going to take regular Joe people. Why not?
I can see that, but I don't see. I think it'll be cost prohibitive during my lifetime.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's going to be about the same as it costs to camp at Glacier.
I agree with that.
We won't be able to do that either.
So I got something interesting for you, because we've talked many times on this podcast about water and how important it is to have it, to drink it, and have the capabilities of storing it. Consumers are spending billions of dollars a year on reusable bottles to stay hydrated, and then they're buying bottled water anyway, even as faucet water remains free. So there's a, according to Camelback, which is a maker of reusable bottles, there's more than $2 billion of reusable water bottles sold in the United States each year.
Mm-hmm.
And the sales of single-serve water bottles has reached 11.3 billion gallons in the last year. So people are buying reusable bottles at an outlandish rate, and they're using them, but they're using them and they're filling them with single serve bottles. So they're not filling them up at the faucet.
Yeah.
I've got the numbers right in front of me. It's
which is crazy, because I think we might've talked about this on that podcast before. Like I forget what national park I was at, and they, you know, there's a big sign that says they're, you know, discontinuing the single use, you know, throwaway bottles of water effective in 2031. And you're like, really? I mean, does it need to take 10 years to get rid of plastic water bottles? I mean, give me a break. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's what they're doing. They go to, you know, go to the store, you buy that gallon or the 5 gallon, you know, big things of water, and then they're putting in their reusable water bottles, which is kind of defeats the purpose. But
well, I just thought that was very ironic. That
is interesting.
There's this boom in buying reusable bottles, but there's also a boom in buying bottled water, and they're both being purchased by the same consumer.
Yeah.
So, Mike, do you have any updates that you want to give about your vehicle?
Well, like I said, I'm just working on it. I've got like what I estimate to, if I can make these events in the fall, I got about 45 days of work to do. Well, 45 days of available days to work. And I got to use every second, because there's a lot of stuff to do. But most of the outside's done. Most of the cab is done, and I'm finishing up or working on the garage, and then I'll get inside the actual house part probably this week.
Mike, I made a mistake, and I did not send you a picture. I meant to send you the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder.
Seen it.
But I still want to mention that it's going to start at 35.8. And I think it was last week we were discussing their Titan, and it was like 45 something.
I think so, yeah.
Nissan is making themselves a viable choice simply by most of the vehicles that are their competitors, they're almost at half their price. So what do you think about that? Do you think that that's a strategic move?
They've never been able to crack into any of the markets that I think they want to compete in. They've never cracked into the commercial market. They've never cracked into the overland market. They've never really cracked into the, you know, the camping and the, you know, outdoorsy stuff, the four by four, like they've never been able to put out or compete with, say, Toyota, obviously, is the big one. And even to some extent, you know, some of you in the periphery stuff, and not with the American products either.
So I don't understand why they have such difficulty moving into the, I don't have people complaining about Nissan products.
No.
Most people I talk to, most of the information that I read, Nissan makes decent vehicles.
But think about it. You and I know what, two or three, maybe people that we know fairly well that full time in them, right? Like I could think of a couple off the top of my head, but I can name a ton of them that are have Toyotas or Jeeps or even, you know, Ford trucks or whatever, you know?
So what do you think their mistake is? What is it that they're doing wrong? Or why is it that they can't seem to get traction?
Well, I think they were behind from the, okay, look, go backwards like 10 or 15 years. Remember all the competition it was like with the small size pickup trucks? You know, GMC came out with one, Chevy had one. You know, Toyota has been around with a small size pickup forever, super popular.
Oh, I Nissan remember when it was a Datsun pickup.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But Nissan's was kind of like ugly. Remember? It was really ugly looking, and nobody wanted to buy that thing. I think they've been just behind, you know, for a long time in the truck world. See, I think Nissan was known for cars.
And yeah, because the only vehicles that they've really had success with are the Nissan Maxima, which I used to own back in the 80s.
Well, how about the sports cars, the 240, 260, 280Z, like the sports cars they were known for.
And the latest version of it is still a sweet vehicle. It's a sweet vehicle.
And Altima.
The Altima, I was going to say Maxima and Altima are their stalwarts. Those are the vehicles that they can depend on. And people. So
you can with like Camry and, you know, the Toyota lineup and Mazda and some of those, they compete well in the car thing. They never put anything up against in the truck market. That's what the problem is.
Well, I think Nissan makes good vehicles. I hope they don't end up being squashed out the market.
Well, once again, like we're talking about the overland market, in order for them to be successful, they have to be able to sell enough of it so the aftermarket people produce the equipment for their trucks. I mean, because that's where Toyota dominates for sure. Like you can go, I can name you 15 aftermarket producers of products that make stuff for Toyotas.
No, more than 15.
I mean, hundreds. But I can't name that same thing. Even if you looked at, say, you went to Alucab as an example and wanted to put a camper on the back of the truck, they make it for Chevy, they make it for Ford, they make it for GM, they make it for Toyota, but they don't make it for Nissan.
I sometimes think about, you're familiar with the Nissan Xterra, right? Like that's the truck that Mo Leisure, the people that we were talking about are driving Nissan Xterra.
All of them have the Xterra. The Xterra is the only truck that they've ever produced that's gotten any traction.
So I think about this sometimes, and I want your opinion. I believe if the Nissan Xterra had never existed and came out this year, it would just, people would buy them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it goes to be like what we were just talking about with the Hyundai. It's square, it's boxy, it's got good room, it's got good ground clearance. There's a lot of good stuff with that platform. But because it's been around, I think because it's had the Nissan badge on it. Nissan struggled for a long time in the States. Remember, they had to change their name. It was Datsun. It's gone through this whole thing. They've always kind of struggled in the States.
So what you got going on, Mike, for the rest of the summer?
Working on my truck. That's it.
And are you behind? Are you on schedule? What's the deal?
I'm behind right now. I feel like I'm behind. A lot to do. Not a lot of time. Hey, bottom line is it's aggressive trying to build a completely build out something in 2 months.
Oh, I understand. Something as big as what you trying to build. And what's the updates as far as on your YouTube?
I got to get some videos out. Everybody's asking me about that. I've been filming the entire process. It's just getting time to produce the, you know, to actually do the editing part.
Everybody listening to this, publicly shame him.
Oh, yeah.
He's been promising these videos. He ain't got one out yet. Publicly shame him so we can see these damn videos.
That's right. See, but the problem is if you see the too many videos, you're not going to see the actual truck done. So do you want the real truck or do you want the videos? You get to pick.
The customer is always right. We want both.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, I'm going next week or no, not next week. Yeah, next week I'm going to Mountain West. I don't want to spoil it, but I've got some big plans for my journey there. And once I get there, I got some big plans. Got something coordinated with, well, I don't want to mention them yet, but I have something coordinated with one of the vendors. I have to wait and make sure that they give me what they're supposed to give me this week before I start mentioning their name.
Right.
What's her name? Candy is going to be hooking up with me when we get there. We're going to miss you, Mike.
I know. Well, you'll have to zoom me in.
Well, all you got to do is follow my Instagram. I'm going to give you wall-to-wall coverage, more coverage than you probably want.
Forward to it.
And we're also going to, well, I will announce this. We're going to be doing another best rig in camp contest, and I have a sponsor for it who will be giving away a prize, but I'm still working on another one, so I don't want to announce just that one person. I'm not going to announce who the sponsors are until the actual Thursday when the event starts.
Perfect.
But I have confirmed that there is at least one prize for the winner of the best rig in camp. And anybody listening who will be attending, if you want to make sure that I see your vehicle, because I may miss your vehicle, if you got some incredible vehicle, reach out to us and we'll make arrangements to make sure that we look at your vehicle. And if it's worthy, maybe we'll do a rig walk around and we'll do a little bit more.
That sounds good. So hit us up.
So Mike, sounds like we're both very busy this week. We're both behind the eight ball. So we're going to end this week's a little shorter than we usually do. Is there something that you wanted to get out there? Something you wanted to say to the people?
Get out there and enjoy what's left of summer, everybody.
Well, everybody, you know what I'm going to say, but you're wrong this time. I want to just tell everybody to not put off your dreams. The longer you put off your dreams, the less of a chance you have at attaining those dreams. Now, with that, I'd like to say, stay safe, tread lightly, and hopefully I'll see you here or on a trail soon.
You have been listening to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints. Like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more.